Welcome to the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast, intended to equip and encourage business owners and aspiring entrepreneurs. Taught by active business owner, best-selling author, and teacher, Sean Castrina.
All right, this is Sean Castrina with the 10-Minute Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm always excited about guests that have founded companies, and we have one today. We have Jim Estill. Jim, it's good to have you on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Sean.
Hey, so listen, obviously you have a great startup story, growing a company to $2 billion in sales, working out of the trunk of your car. Can we start with that?
Sure. So I was a university engineering student and I needed a computer and got a better deal if I bought two. So I bought two and sold one, then bought another one and sold it, and then bought some printers. And next thing you know, I'm buying and selling computer products. And so I built that company to a couple of billion in sales.
I like how you say that, like a couple billion in sales, like it's, you know, 10,000.
Well, it took me a long time to get there. So I'm an overnight success. It just took me 30 years to get there.
Okay, good. I wanted you to add that 30 year part.
So what I did is I retired, which I did what I thought entrepreneurs should do. You grow your company, you sell it for a lot of money and you retire. So I retired, and for 5 years, I was doing some angel investing. I was a board member. I was a mentor, you know, doing some coaching. And I sat on the board of this company, Danby Appliances. The CEO resigned, and I said, "Oh, I could come in and run Danby Appliances." And then I started running the company again. I said, "Yeah, I like running a company. I don't like just being an advisor or a board member."
And you founded Danby, am I correct?
No, I did not found
it. Okay, you were the CEO. That's right. Okay.
Right. So I was on the board of Danby. The CEO resigned. I said, "I'll go in and run it." And then I said, "Oh, that's my next decade of career. I'm gonna run Danby." Danby makes about 2 million appliances a year. We do about 400 million in sales. We do bar fridges and freezers and wine coolers. We actually have an air conditioning business, which you're going to say that's kind of not an appliance, but it has a compressor in it. So that's why.
That's what I was thinking. It's like why Honda deals with everything in motors.
That's exactly right.
A motor's a motor to them.
And then the ownership group said they wanted me to sell the company. So I said, "Wait a minute, I was going to work here for my next decade." So I said, "How much do you want me to sell it for?" They told me, and I said, "Okay, great, I'll take the company." So I bought the company about 5 years ago after running for a year. And now I'm just growing Danby Appliances. As I was growing Danby Appliances, I said, I was sitting in the factory saying, "Well, what else could we make?" And I said, "Well, let's think of us not as an appliance manufacturer. Let's think of us as a company that makes big boxes." So then I had been reading about parcel theft, and I was getting, you're getting a lot of deliveries from Amazon and .com and, Wayfair and everything. So I said, let's build a parcel mailbox, which is essentially a big box. So we designed a parcel mailbox that has an IP camera on it, and it sends you an email or a text to tell you you've got a parcel that weighs 3 pounds. And I thought, trend-wise, that within a decade, most people will have some sort of parcel solution on their front porch.
So this is a box that sits on your, that's what I'm trying to tie it to. Yeah. So like, when we have mailbox, et cetera, started with the, you could get a small mailbox, so it didn't come to your house. So you had something where if you had a little company set up, or you just, let's say you traveled a lot or you were a student, things of that nature that worked, that was a very profitable, great idea, I think 25 years ago.
Yeah, but this concept is you will have a parcel mailbox on your front porch.
Yeah, which I love, because that's where people get it stolen. People get stuff stolen from their front porch.
Exactly. So when I get home at night, I don't want to drive out to the mall to pick up.
Yeah, I love this. Next generation.
Exactly. So, and the other thing that it has is actually has a code. You can punch in a code, and I give you a one-time use code. So for returns, you can give the UPS or the FedEx driver the code to type in and open the box to get the returns. So I think within a decade, most people will have one. And while I'm designing that, I'm thinking a lot about parcels and parcel dimensions and all this kind of stuff. And I am driving around and I said, the way they're doing parcels is dysfunctional. To ship a parcel from New York to New Jersey goes New York to Memphis to New Jersey. The energy footprint is massive. The time is even slow because you're doing this hub and spoke. So we I essentially came up with ShipperBee, which is a, now that's a startup. So that's starting from zero, and that's a courier company doing the same thing as FedEx. It's door-to-door delivery, but it's using, instead of massive sort centers, it's using micro hubs. So it's more like using the internet versus the old mainframe computer. So we don't send everything to a central hub for sorting. It goes to a transfer point, and computers do all the sorting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and the one thing that I'm really love about that is we can actually save 73.1% of the greenhouse gas per parcel shipped. And that could be a massive environmental legacy.
Yeah, you've done a lot in your retirement. That's how you retire. See, this is the blueprint, my friends, because I don't believe true entrepreneurs ever retire.
You're absolutely right. And the beauty of being an entrepreneur is even if I did decide to retire and sold Danby Appliances or whatever, you can still have your hand in when you're an entrepreneur. It's not like being an employee where, you know, my job's kind of binary. I work 9 to 5 or I don't. Yeah. That's not, no, I could stay on your board. I could, you know, like,
do anything. I agree. I told my wife this the other day, you know, I go, let's just get this straight. I'm never retiring. If you ever think I'm going to be the person who goes with you to like the grocery store or to you to get your hair done, it's never happening in this lifetime. I go, I want you to picture this. I said, Bev, my head gets propped up in the center of a conference table and people just ask me advice. Nothing on me works but my big mouth and my brain, and they will pay me dearly for what's inside it and what comes out of it.
That's genius. That's great.
I mean, but that's the truth. I'm like, my gosh, I said, I would hope at 90, I'd be at my optimum brain level. I've got so many failures and so many solutions and so many things I've seen. I've always told people, hey, failure is best heard through a secondhand story, and it's a hell of a lot cheaper.
Well, one of the things I always say is fail often, fail fast, fail cheap. And that's a way to move forward. Fail often, fail fast, fail cheap. So I've had more failures than most people, but that's given me more success. One of my other parts of my path of my career, I invested in over 150 startup companies. One of those, and I was on the board, was BlackBerry. So I was on the board of BlackBerry for 13 years. I joined their board before they were a public company and was on their board for 200 employees up to 18,000 employees. But so everyone said, oh, you're a genius. Yes, you can say I'm a genius, but I did invest in 150 companies. And have you heard of the other 149 of them? Like, it's not been that bad. I did exit from about 25 of them, but you get it. At the end of the day,
we got 100 failures.
Yeah.
Failures are always, my quote is, failures are the speed bump to success.
Absolutely. The other thing I say is having a failure does not make you a failure. In many cases, it's the people who are willing to try that have the failures that are way more successful than the ones who don't try. Not trying, that is failure. So if you're not willing to put yourself out there.
Failure is only failure if it stopped you from the end objective. In other words, if it made you quit, well, then it's a truly failure. But if failure gave you an exit, gave you a different route, slowed it down, made it more difficult, maybe made it more expensive, maybe made it more painful, that's the journey. That's just the journey.
Totally right. And it's the fail often, fail fast, fail cheap. So I'm old. And so I learned the last part, fail cheap. Failure is within affordability. So if I have a failure, then it's not a failure that puts us out of business. It's a, and I always think downside. So when I bring in a new product line or, you know, introduce something, I say, okay, so if that doesn't work, what will we do and how will we still sell some of the products?
Well, what I always tell people is, let me just say this, kill this entire myth out there. Great entrepreneurs are not risk takers. We don't take a hit at a casino when we're holding 16.
Right.
We don't. We manage. I take a risk, but it is so calculated and I do everything humanly possible to get everything in my favor. We don't take blind risk. We're looking at, okay, if I lose, this is what my cost is. Okay, that's going to be 8% of whatever. That's a manageable loss. The upside is this. You know, it's like a war game scenario. We factor in everything that can go wrong if you're smart.
That you are absolutely right. I have an outlet store in my factories where we sell seconds and stuff like that. Yeah. But another function of the outlet store is to sell my mistakes. So we introduce a red fridge. Well, you don't make 100,000 red fridges. You make, what's your minimum? Can we get it as low as 500? Can we get it 250? Like, what's the, and then what if nobody wants them? Well, we sell them in the outlet store because at some price people are willing to take an ugly green one because that's
the price is great. You know, or the price is so good. Yeah, green. We'll paint the room around that.
Exactly.
No, but it's true. This is why I love these interviews, and my team knows who to go after, because everybody, you know, podcasts want this guest. And I'm like, I want somebody who founded a company. Like, oh, it's really, I give my team this. This is the direction. 99% of my interviews, I don't care the company. I don't vet the size of the company. I just tell them, I go, give me somebody who started something. That's an interview I can work with. I said, that interview, I can extract something that will fulfill the podcast mission, equip, encourage, or educate entrepreneurs. Perfect. That's it.
Perfect. So then the advice for anybody who's thinking of starting up is think Nike. And I don't own Nike or any, I have no vested interest here, but it's just do it. Because so many people I know say, oh, I want to go start a business. Now I'm going to go into analysis paralysis and I'm going to spend all my time researching. And then 2 years later, they haven't done it. And then they say, well, that was my idea. I was going to do that. Great. You were going to do it, but you didn't do it. Same thing. People come to me and say, I want you to sign an NDA because I've got the best idea. I'm telling you, ideas are a dime a dozen. I have a drawer full of ideas. It's which one, who can implement the ideas? People come to me with an appliance and they say, great, here's an idea for an appliance. Okay, you know that it's going to take over $1 million by the time you do molds and dyes and designs and certifications and whatnot. It's not the idea. It's the implementation.
Oh, I get DM'd every single day about something with the word idea in it. Listen, I love my dad. My dad's 82. My dad still takes credit for coming up with Jiffy Lube. Okay. My dad lives in a house that I purchased for him. His vehicle that he drives, I purchased for him. I love my dad dearly, but he never acted on that Jiffy Lube. Somebody else did in 1972, sold it a few years later, and Jiffy Lube's still around. An idea is nothing without execution.
Absolutely. Now, you could say that your dad was smart, though, because now I'm not getting my car oil changed because I'm working home like everybody else.
Yeah. I'd like to have had that 40-year run, though.
Well, yes, exactly. And not only that, now everything's going electric where you don't need to change the oil.
Yeah, no, a lot has changed. But the whole idea, and I hope you're getting this out of this podcast. This is great. Anybody knows this, there is no prep with any of my guests. I literally meet my guest 45 seconds before you do. Okay. And because I tell my team, it's real simple. They go, well, how do you think it's going to go? I go, it's really simple. If they're an entrepreneur, it'll go great. If they're not, it'll be very uncomfortable for them and it'll never air. So this one's great. Let me ask you this, because you're gonna be able to answer two questions. Most people can only answer one question that I ask them, but you're a veteran, so you're gonna be able to answer two. So this is gonna be awesome. What's the one piece of startup advice or two that, you know, you're speaking at a college and you got entrepreneurship 101 class, students get up and they're all excited, they all want to start a business. You know, and you've been an investor. What's the one or two piece of advice you like to give startup founders?
So some of it we've already talked about. One of it is just do it. But the other part of it is what you were talking about, and that is also consider what your downside is and what are your. So it's like we place a bet, but we hedge the bet. What are we going to do? Like I talked about, I was selling computers from the trunk of my car. That was how I started. You know what else I was doing? I was painting houses, because when I painted your house and charged you $600, I know that was $600 sure cash. So that's how I funded my startup, was I had my sure cash and my my other dream cash, right?
Well, I always tell people, I get very frustrated when people tell me that they're, should I quit my job? No, you shouldn't quit your job. You got 168 hours in a week.
Right.
You do, I'm going to give you a really tough concept here. You can do two things at once. And I would argue it's a better preparation to be absolutely busy, absolutely slammed, absolutely exhausted, absolutely spent, welcome to entrepreneurship. This is where you quit a 40-hour week job to take on an 80-hour week job anyway. So you're just, you know, why don't make some money while your business is getting off the ground?
You're absolutely right. Another thing I say is a change is as good as a break. So when I was painting houses, like going and painting a house is a completely different brain space than outselling computers. Yeah. So it was like a break, because I could have taken a break and said, oh, okay, I'm going to go watch television or something like that. But no, that's not how I did it. My break was to make some money to put groceries on the table.
Listen, I did the same thing. I was married, I had a child. I worked. The other thing is, I think sometimes it's good to do something that you don't want to do because it motivates you to achieve so that you can do what you really want to do. In other words, even when I was doing the job I didn't want to do, it's not like I ever complained about it, but I knew this wasn't where I was going to be 5 years from now. And the motivation to succeed, to be able to, you know, work the kind of hours I wanted to and make the decisions, put my own team on the field, all those type of things, was if my business succeeded. So having the job that maybe, you know, that I knew I wasn't going to be there forever, it was a daily reminder of what I didn't want.
One other saying I repeat often is successful people do tough things. And so that is how I would get through something, which is not my favorite job to do. Or when I had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go catch a flight, or I'm not flying anymore, but if I had to, another one I say is, what the heck, go for it anyways. So I want to sell to Costco, and Costco, I don't know who to call, and they might reject me. Well, what the heck, go for it anyways. What's the worst case? They're going to throw me out of the office? I don't think so. They're going to, you know, maybe they won't meet with me, but it's what the heck, go for it anyways. And
entrepreneurs definitely ask, and keep, we bang on doors. We, you know, I was just thinking through a scenario this morning. You know, it's just my wife needed to take a trip, and it was very spontaneous. And I'm like, I'm an entrepreneur. I hate traveling, but I'm an entrepreneur. I'm like, honey, this is why I would win the Amazing Race, because my brain thinks differently. Like, if I got to get from point A to point B, most people just start calling, you know, going on the airlines to see what flight leaves the soonest. Now, the next most ambitious person looks for a private flight. No, I'm the guy who goes to the FedEx thing and I ship 150 pounds right there, right now. You know, I ship myself. Like, I mean, our brains just work differently.
So I think you're absolutely right. One trick that has also gotten me a lot of success is do the worst thing first thing.
And explain that. That's going to end up somewhere good.
I've got a list of things that I need to get done. And if I basically circle which is the one that is the one thing that I do not like to do, do not want to do, I do it first thing, because the rest of the day gets better. I've just done the worst thing thing on my list that I didn't want to do, file my taxes, whatever. Yeah, yeah. And otherwise what happens is it hangs over me all day. Should I be filing, you know, how do I file my taxes? Blah, blah, blah.
It's right? Funny. I joke about that, but when I teach, I tell people it's called my, I don't want to do it muscle. I have one thing in my schedule nearly every day that I just don't want to do. It's annoying. It's a phone call I don't want to make. It's something. It's a tax return. It's the addendum. It's getting the information for the, you know, for the workers' comp audit. It's something that's just like a prostate exam. There's no upside of it other than to hear that you're healthy.
Right. That's exactly right.
So tell me this. All right. The next question that you're able to answer that not everybody can hear. You're 5 to 10 years into a business, and obviously there's a lot of reasons why it not be going the way you want, but somebody comes to you, they're just stuck. The business is stuck. It's just not growing anymore. What do you find, you know, as a person who's been on a board, a CEO, founded companies, what do you typically find as like the few things where, why they're not growing, that are, it's like your go-to, like if somebody puts you on a board, they're not growing. You sit down in that first meeting, what are the first few things to start going through your head that you want to start looking at or getting information on?
So what I will tend to do is encourage a business to shotgun a little, like do a few different things. And then when they find out one area is working, then use a rifle and shoot really only in that direction. So when you find out, wow, your podcast is, you know, listenership's going through the roof and that's the one, then start putting more energy into your podcast and less energy into your speaking gigs or whatever your other.
I like this. You did the one thing that I haven't heard somebody say. A lot of people, and I'm huge on this though, focus, but you did something that I haven't heard. Shotgun, which shoots out many pellets.
Yeah.
Gives you a chance to hit a wider target. And then you see what it hits and then get out the rifle. I like that one too.
Right. And so when a business is stuck, a little bit of shotgunning makes sense and a little less focus, because often it's stuck because there's so much focus on one thing, but that one thing is not, you're not able to grow it. You're not able to do it. The other thing I'm big on is A/B testing, which is a marketing concept where you send 100 people a note saying we have the best price, and 100 people a note saying we have the most durable product, and find out, gee, everybody wants durability more than they want price. And so let's send out the 1,000 to say durability. But I will do the same thing in my use of time, my use of resources. It really is that fail often, fail fast, fail cheap. Let's try a couple of things. I even deliberately will budget and say, okay, I want to spend X dollars. I'll spend, you know, 1/5 of it here and another fifth of it here, another fifth of it here, another fifth of it here. And it's not only money, it's time and resource. You know, it's your mindset.
No, your shotgun rifle illustration will be stolen and absolutely used again from every platform I ever spend time at, because that's good. It's hard for something to make it into my, like, where it's into my dialect. That's worked its way into my dialect. And I'm a fanatic about beta testing. Like, one thing I tell people is that we do a lot of marketing, but I don't ever do all my marketing at one time. Let me just, like, a real quick example of what you're saying. I own a home service conglomerate, does millions and millions of dollars. When I'm testing something, I'll do the month of January radio, month of February TV, these two channels, Hallmark Channel and a couple other. All right, March, I'll go just news channels, MSNBC, then I'll go radio, month of April. I'll do this for an entire year. It's not what I really like, but what happens is I'll be going for like 3 or 4 years and I'll get like certain numbers, how people heard about us. But I truly like to see it. Like, because if I do nothing but marketing for 30 days, then I feel the pain. It's like, okay, wait, we had a bad month. We had a good month. That was kind of average. So I can go, okay, this moves the needle. Well, after a year, I have like the 6 things that will do it. Then I'll do 3 straight months of all 6. And it's like, you know, gasoline on a fire. I tinker with it. I'm always tinkering with combinations.
Well, and I do it. I measure. So I try to measure and say, local radio stations gave me this return, and national radio stations gave me that return, and I compare radio to television. I compare television to internet advertising.
It's true. I micro everything. I got a dashboard system that makes me look like I'm OCD. People go, Sean, my friends will go, how do you afford a Super Bowl ad? I go, well, how can I afford not to have a Super Bowl ad? I go, the Super Bowl ad moves the needle. I said, because I realized that I would have to buy 1,000 commercials. I've done the math. In other words, the return on a Super Bowl ad regionally for me will move the needle further. So I told them, it's not an expense to me. I can't afford not to do a Super Bowl ad. I'm grateful that they offer it to me every year because they know I'll prepay.
Awesome.
But it's playing with, you know, it's playing with it and just testing. I love that. I love your 2 pieces of advice. That's so good. The shotgun. If you're stuck, your business is stuck, you know, a shotgun approach, kind of shoot a few things out there, see which one hits something, and then, you know, go down on it, you know, go pull out the rifle. I love that. And I love the idea of, you know, A/B, test everything. The problem is most people don't even know what works anymore, and they don't know what's not working. They have no clue.
Right. And we also, as companies, get in that, well, we always did this. I always did this. The next thing you know, that's taking all my time and all my resources, because we always did this, but people don't value it. So whenever I spend money, we have to think, well, are people going to value that we did that? I mean, a simple example in the appliance business is when you buy an appliance, do you open the manual? I don't think you do. And if you have to open the manual, we have failed. So why would we spend more money on a manual we should spend as the least amount of money we can on a manual and make the product as intuitive as possible. And of course, you put everything online because everyone goes online, and videos and other things. Like if I am trying to install a product, I would rather watch a little short video to show me how to install it. And it needs to be short. I don't want to watch a half hour.
I was going to say, if you give me anything more than one page.
Right.
You lost me. And I need, I need pictures. Right. You know, I need the whole thing, baby.
Quick start guide.
Exactly.
What we try to do is have the most non-technical, least savvy person take a product and install it.
See, I should work as just a test dummy. Because I am that person.
We need someone with two thumbs that doesn't know anything, because the engineers who do it, they say, well, of course you just download, you know, write a little script to download your app. Yeah. No, we don't write a little script to download the app. We just make the assumption people don't know anything, right?
Yeah, no, I love it. This has been a great interview, man. This has been great. I'm looking at some couple things here to see if I think I've touched everything. Jim, I hope I didn't mess up your name in the beginning.
Oh, it's Estill. All good. Estill. Yeah, it's all
okay, good. Jim, this was a fantastic interview. I mean, I feel like, you know, it's just, I love talking to people that know more than me. And that's how I felt today. And I like that. I like learning. I like that I'm two pages in on my legal pad. And I've got things that I can use, and that's when I know it was good. And today was just a fantastic interview. I know that our audience got tremendous value. I know they got equipped. I know they got some. I know they got some education, and I know they're encouraged. And so we hit all three touch points.
Awesome. Well, I enjoyed it. So thanks very much for having me, Sean.
No, I appreciate it. I don't know how, if there's anything anybody needs to connect with you on or just buy from all your companies, but tell us how.
Exactly. And I'm on LinkedIn. So anyone wants to connect to me, just connect on LinkedIn. It's probably the easiest.
Well, that's perfect. Just hang on for one second. I'm going to sign off here. This is Sean Castrina with the 10 Minute Entrepreneur Podcast. We had an incredible guest today. Listen to this one again. There is so much good information in this. We will talk again soon.